And so there's this theme going on of like playing it cool, because I was really feeling like shit. And, you know, remember, I'm still taking Adderall, I'm still taking Prozac, but I never wanted other people to know that I was anxious or insecure. Hello there, and welcome to the Chip Grossman Show. This is the inaugural episode, numero uno, and I am so grateful right now that you are listening. I am smiling from ear to ear. I've been wanting this podcast to come together for a long time, and I'm happy that it's finally here. So as a quick introduction, I'm your host, Chip Grossman, and I'm recording from sunny San Francisco. It's Saturday afternoon. The weather's beautiful. What I'm going to talk about on this show is a lot of things. But first and foremost, this is a place to share personal reflections and to share conversations with other people about how to improve your life and achieve your dreams by, first and foremost, improving your self-awareness and your self-management. And it's informed by my years, my studies of work. And my reasoning is that I've been through a lot of pain. I've been through many years. I went through many years where I was struggling without telling anyone. And a lot of my own struggles were based on my misperceptions of what truly creates happiness in this human life. And I spent a lot of years pursuing the incorrect methods. Ultimately, I found a path that actually works for me. And I want to share that with people. And I think there's a lot of different paths out there, which is why I look forward to interviewing other people as well. So I found solutions to my own pain, but it required a ton of work. And I've been blessed along the way to come into contact with some amazing teachers. And now I think it's my time to start sharing some of the things I've learned and to pass on this knowledge so that more people can at least be aware that these methods exist and have the tools to reduce their suffering on their own. And so I have a lot of fun doing nerding out on this podcast stuff, learning about the new age of content. And so I'm actually just having fun. That's why I'm spending my Saturdays doing this. And so to begin this whole podcast, I want to start with my story. I feel like it's best to begin with my story so that you have context on who I am, where I came from, and what I've been through, so that you can understand why I'm doing what I'm doing. And so that it's not just someone trying to talk. I mean, this is really mostly informed by my own personal experience. And so my story is a long one, you know, it's 25 years long, but I'm going to wrap it up and condense it into three distinct parts. And that's really kind of youth, high school, and then college for this first episode. And there's going to be three different parts. So part one is really kind of getting me through to sophomore year of college. And with that, let's begin. So when I was a kid, I had a blessed youth. I was born into an amazing family. I was the firstborn in my family, but you know, my parents are just fantastic. And I was brought into this world with a ton of love. And not only from my two parents, but anyone who knows me closely also knows Lulu, who was like my second mom and is still like my second mom, who was our nanny. So, you know, she really took care of me as well. So I came into this situation. I had everything going for me. And I was a happy kid, no doubt. It's hard not to be happy when your life consists of the normal things like going to school, which every kid hates. But the summers, you know, going to country club, Farmington Country Club, getting dropped off at tennis camp for 2 hours, running around playing tennis, then going to the pool and eating chicken fingers and doing tricks on the diving board and pissing off the lifeguards and trying to create trouble wherever me and my friends could. We were really pranksters and we had a lot of fun just wreaking havoc around the country club. Not really havoc, but you know, so I had a blessed childhood and I was pretty solid at sports. I would get playing time and everything. Maybe that's just because the coaches were had to give you playing time. But, you know, I had a lot of things going for me, even as a young kid. But I was definitely insecure. And I don't know if I was, like, born into this world with insecurity or if I developed it from trauma at an early age or how this all happened. But there's no doubt I've spent much of my life as a very insecure person. And so what does that mean? Well, when you're insecure, it kind of defines your experience. It's the way that you perceive the world. You look for security in possessions, in status, in relationships. And I was so young that I was insecure, but I had no concept of how to find security. So I was always just trying to, you know, like most kids, just fit in. But it was hard, you know, because in school there's bullies and no one's really in school. They're not really teaching you about how to feel secure about your life. They're teaching you the alphabet. Why do they start with the damn alphabet before they start with teaching you how to feel secure? I don't understand that. I think the education system has a huge miss right now with helping humans fully develop. But anyways, bullying. I think that was traumatic. And I wasn't super bullied. I wasn't constantly picked on. But I was bullied. And there's this one particular experience that is hardwired in my brain. And I remember going to Meriwether Lewis School as a first grader. I came a year late because I did the private school kindergarten where you have your nap time and all that stuff. Anyways, I came in and I was just trying to fit in as a first grader. And I remember climbing to the top of the playground one day and asking this kid who was like the king of the playground. He was somehow the king of the pecking order. And I asked him, you know, hey man, can I get in on this game of tag? And he was like, no chance, like no way, like not no. And that just crushed me. And I remember climbing off the playground and going over and sitting on a curb and just kind of like feeling so shitty. And so the only reason I think that's hardwired into my brain is because I think that was, you know, that's traumatic. So when I talk about insecurities, I definitely don't think that it was all informed by, you know, the way that I came into the world. I think I experienced some things that caused it. Anyways, going on up through middle school, it was the same story where, you know, I still had a lot going for me. I was one of the more athletic kids. I was never the most athletic, but I found a lot of identity in sports and I was doing pretty well. We had an amazing family. We had family dinners every night, lots of love at home. But definitely the sense of insecurity was still there. You know, that's when you're starting to go through puberty. You're starting to become interested in girls. And, you know, I had my first girlfriend in fifth grade. I asked her out on over the phone. We dated for 3 weeks. We didn't talk once. Anyways, fifth grade. And so middle school was as tough for as it is for anyone. And I definitely didn't like grow into who I really was. There's always this sense of who am I? Like scared to kind of speak my mind. I was always a quiet kid. And you know, it was cool. I still had great friends and we had a great time together, but it was never like fully me. I was always just kind of trying to like impress people. But anyways, going into high school, the insecurities definitely continued. And one thing I wasn't expecting after being the king of the school, you know, kings of the school as eighth graders, you go up into the big school and as a freshman and whoa, it's like overwhelm. I was pretty small. So I'm looking up at these seniors who are just like, they've got facial hair and they're much bigger than me. And they're talking to all the girls in my grade. So I immediately start thinking like, well, no chance. I don't have a chance with girls anymore. So anyways, freshman year opened up a whole new can of worms in terms of insecurities. And, you know, it was exciting at the same time. I don't want to paint this picture that my life was this black hole of insecurity. You know, I was getting by just fine. But it's kind of like there's always this layer of like something missing, I guess, is how it felt. In terms of just like being able to express myself, feeling confident, feeling like I was really me. And so these insecurities in freshman year, they attracted me along with curiosity to weed and alcohol. So we were definitely curious about these things. So we, you know, kind of started experimenting as freshmen, and I liked it so much, even though we weren't like getting crazy or anything. We were sneaking off at like 2 a.m. when parents went to bed and stuff, and you know, doing what those reckless things do, you know, smoking a bowl, having a drink, stealing booze from the parents' liquor cabinet, just like classic freshman stuff. And the reason I was so attracted to those things was because I was so insecure, I think, in my normal state of being, that I craved something different. I craved an escape. And I think that was part of it. The other part is that, you know, these chemicals make you feel good. Like weed releases dopamine in your brain. Alcohol makes you feel comfortable. So it was a combination of those things. It wasn't immediately just an escape mechanism. It was both. But part of the reason I loved it was because I could actually feel comfortable in my own skin. And yeah. So JV lacrosse that year was when I fell into my groove in terms of becoming pretty good at sports. And you know, as a starting attackman, I was scoring a lot of goals. And that's when I decided lacrosse was going to become part of my identity. And I had a great time, you know, excelling in lacrosse. And I started practicing a lot. And I just had fun. I also was getting a little bored at my current school at STAT. It's called St. Anne's. And you know, it was just kind of stagnant. Nothing had changed much. And so I wanted something new. I'm an explorer. I've always been curious about, you know, what I don't have. You know, I think the grass is always greener is something that's applied to me my whole life. I've always been curious about the things I don't have. So I decided to go to boarding school. And I probably should have done a better job of managing my expectations. I didn't have any expectations, but I thought it was going to be great. So when I got there and I realized that everyone else had already had a year together and there were already plenty of social circles formed, I was an outsider, which was a new experience for me. I hadn't been an outsider since fifth grade when I changed schools. And so it was just this unexpected variable. And granted, there were a lot of new kids who came in as sophomores. One of my best friends from childhood came in, Connor. And so I had a core nucleus of other people who were new to hang out with. But immediately I saw other groups and I wanted to be a part of them. I wanted to be accepted. I just wanted to fit in. So a lot of my sophomore year was just a struggle to figure out who I was. And I think I spent a lot of time trying to be someone that others would accept. And that's a hard game to play, you know, when you're constantly trying to act in ways that impress others. And, you know, luckily our lacrosse community was awesome. And there were some really talented lacrosse players who were a lot better than me in my class. They were called the Super Softs. And so I just wanted to be like in with that crowd. And so I tried to hang out with them and I really did kind of integrate to some degree, but you know, you miss something when you're not there for freshman year. But, you know, I became friends with these guys and I think I was trying a little too hard just to speed up a relationship, and relationships grow organically. You don't like make yourself friends with someone. And what I've realized now is that honestly, you get along naturally with people and some people you don't get along with naturally. And so when you try to force relationships, it just can create a lot of tension. And I was definitely trying to force a lot of relationships, which I feel like a lot of people out there can relate to. This is still something I'm continuing to learn about today. So sophomore year goes by, tough year. You know, I got a little bit of playing time. I was on varsity, but, you know, just a little bit. And so it's all about me trying to fit in. Then junior year comes around and you know, at this point I'm a little more integrated into the school. I have some good friends. I'm still kind of feeling like an outsider, but I was, you know, really identified with the lacrosse team at this point. And that was good for me. It gave me something to attach onto and it gave me something to actually feel secure about. And so that's what my identity became. And also at boarding school, you know, at the same time, there's this hilarious hookup culture. So really kind of getting to know, understand relationships and, you know, developing relationships with girls, which is hilarious because half of what you do is walk around campus looking for spots to hook up where teachers won't find you, you know, including like grass fields and baseball dugouts. And so that's like a whole fun thing, a whole fun culture that I got exposed to. So yeah, fast forward to senior year, and senior year is actually pretty awesome because I was, you know, I was established as like one of the guys on the lacrosse team, was one of the starters, and I had everything going for me, you know, from lacrosse to girls. I had an amazing girlfriend and I was being recruited by top Division III schools, even got a little Division I interest. And we had a great advisory group where I had, you know, just amazing mentor, Damien. So I got all these things going for me, but but I'm anxious and definitely feeling unfulfilled. And you know, something that I kind of dropped out here is that, you know, weed and alcohol never really left the picture since freshman year. I'd become interested and I liked it and I'd kept doing it. So, you know, those insecurities, I was still finding ways to manage those, mostly just by coping on a day to day. But I loved the opportunity to go and party. Like, that was like the most fun. That was what I looked forward to the most out of anything, was like finding ways to party. And it was never really like getting trashed at that point or anything, but you know, a good buzz. And I just loved it. I think again, it goes back to like feeling comfortable in your own skin. And so high school was all about me trying to fit in. And you know, the other thing is that I was really inward about everything. And so I'm having these struggles with fitting in. I'm having success at the same time, so I'm doing well. So it's this weird mixture of like wanting more, but having success and not feeling fulfilled, but, you know, having fun sometimes, feeling good on some days, not feeling good on others, feeling stressed, not really realizing that I was feeling stressed, not having any way to communicate about it. So everything was, all this was bottled up on the inside in my own brain. And all I can think of is that people have always said, you're really hard to read. And now I really understand, especially back then, because I was bottling up everything. Everything was being internalized. I wasn't really talking about it. Everything was a surface level conversation. I was way too scared to ever tell anyone like that I was feeling anxious or depressed. Which is when probably the scariest and most courageous moment of my high school career comes in, which is about midway through my senior year. It was just getting to the point where, you know, between college and applying for schools and all the pressure I was putting on myself in lacrosse and, you know, all the other things that were going on, my anxiety had gotten to the worst point that it had ever been. And it actually got to the point where I felt that it was a problem I needed to address. And I was at boarding school, so luckily I couldn't self-medicate in a way that drove me into a black hole. You know, you can't get drunk every night at boarding school because you won't last very long. They'll kick you out. So I had to really deal with these things head on and to be sober with them, you know, most days. And so the scariest thing that I realized was that I had to talk to someone. I needed help. And so I'm driving down 29 in Charlottesville on vacation. I think it was Thanksgiving break my senior year. And I knew I wanted to talk to my mom about this, but I was so embarrassed. And I didn't know how to start the conversation. And I'm sitting there, we're just driving to the doctor, I think, and I start sweating because I know that I'm going to bring it up. I'm going to tell her. And I sit there thinking about how to say it. And, you know, finally I work up the courage to say, like, hey, mom, I'm feeling really stressed. And I think I want to talk to someone about it. And I think she was kind of surprised because she's never been someone who has a lot of stress. So to hear her say it about me, and I had always kept things so bottled up nice and tight, no one ever really knew there was anything going on with me. So but she received it so well and in such a loving way. And she got me, she was like, yeah, let's do this as soon as we can. So I went to see a psychiatrist, I think a few days later, and you gotta love the Western medicine, right? Our system is quite interesting, because I walked out of the psychiatrist office with a prescription for Adderall and Prozac and diagnosis that I had generalized anxiety disorder and attention deficit disorder. So just like that, you know, here you got these things going on. Here are some chemicals you can start putting in your body. So the Adderall definitely worked. I was laser focused in school from that point on. The Prozac, I never really, it might have dulled the pain a little, but it was just, I couldn't really tell. I don't think I was really in tune enough with my body to really feel the difference. But so I started taking those things and, you know, kind of like, I guess, start of senior year of high school, around then sometime, maybe midway through the year. I could have the timing off, but nonetheless, the rest of senior year went great. We won states in lacrosse. I had an amazing year. I got recruited. I got committed to go to Colby College, and you know, it was mostly a good year. I still wasn't talking about anything inwardly. But anyways, high school ended and we made it. Somehow made it out without getting in trouble, without getting kicked out. So we made it to Beach Week. Beach Week was a lot of fun. And that was like when all of the release from boarding school took place. So we really got after it. Lots of booze, lots of weed. And, you know, it was like, it was a perfect opportunity to just, you know, it was a lot of fun and we were celebrating, but at the same time, it was celebratory self-medication. Like, so, you know, but this is classic. I don't think that's bad or anything, but, you know, I think it's where a lot of people are. Where, you know, the amount and the ways that I was using and a lot of my friends were using drugs and alcohol was not healthy. Getting blackout is not healthy. There were kids who were so blacked out at that week that they were driving in cars. Like, that's just, you know, these are symptoms of people wanting to escape reality as opposed to using substances to just elevate a positive experience. So I was definitely more in the escape bucket, but you know, having a lot of fun. But those are dangerous substances when you're using them that way. And then came college. So I show up to Colby College, which is in Maine. For some reason, people, I decided to go to school in the coldest place in America to play lacrosse, which is a sport that's supposed to be played in the sunshine. But, you know, I went on my recruiting trip at Colby on like a picture perfect fall day, and it was nice weather and it was autumn. And I was like, oh, this place isn't bad. Like, this place is beautiful. I literally went on like the most beautiful day of the year and did not really conceptualize winter that would, you know, where the sun would set at 4 p.m. And anyways, that's a long story. But Colby College, I'm in a completely new place with a completely new group of people. I literally didn't know anyone except one senior, Lester, who's the man, but who I never really saw. But I knew one person going there who I was never going to hang out with. And me being the curious explorer that I am, you know, all I was so excited about the opportunity. And I think it goes back to managing expectations. I didn't really think about how hard that would be. And so I come in and I kind of come in as this like hotshot recruit because I had had a really good summer tournament where I was scoring behind the back goals and stuff. So there's all this like ego around like who I am and what my skills are in lacrosse and, you know, the fact that I should be starting my freshman year. There's a lot of stress that I have. I mean, it's like going to a completely new place. You're obviously going to be stressed. And it was lonely as shit. I mean, I was a lonely kid. I had no idea how lonely I was. But I was in a new place where I had no friendships and I had no one to talk to. And I still couldn't talk about my feelings with my parents. So it's just me in my own head. And welcome to the land of self-medication, college, where you can party whenever you want to. And I was still a responsible kid. I've always been a responsible person, but I started partying a lot. My whole peer group was partying a lot. We were getting hammered on the weekends and smoking a lot during the week too. And, you know, this just felt normal. And I was self-medicating a lot. But I was also, you know, we were exercising so much. This was Division III competitive lacrosse, top 20 program. So we were, you know, we're working out a lot and being really healthy on that front. So, and the whole sense of exercise and being a part of the team with a mission, that part saved me. I don't know what I would have done if I went to college with nothing but, you know, partying, because I had to go to practice. I had to go to the workouts. And so there's this theme going on of like playing it cool, because I was really feeling like shit. And, you know, remember, I'm still taking Adderall. I'm still taking Prozac. But I never wanted other people to know that I was anxious or insecure. And so this elevated to a deeper and deeper hole of self-medicating with partying on the weekends. And then the world dropped one of those boom moments on me. Boom. I got an email from my coach. It was a fall evening, an evening in the fall in November. And the subject line read, urgent team meeting in the athletic center, Billy Alphon Athletic Center, in 30 minutes. And so I'm like, what the hell's going on? Did someone like get caught it with drugs? Like, are we in trouble? And, you know, so I start walking down, and I, as I'm walking into the athletic center, I see the juniors on my team. I see these guys walking out of the athletic center and they're just bawling their eyes out. Like the saddest look on their faces that I've ever seen. They're crying so hard that there's no talking. You know, it's like a walk by, and like, so now I'm really confused. And I know that something really bad has happened, but I don't know what. So I get into the meeting room and our coach tells us, Coach Domingo says, guys, I've got some terrible news. Derek Flahive has died in a cliff jumping accident in Chile. And the room just fell silent. So this guy Derek, he was a junior on the team. He was studying abroad. This was still the fall of my freshman year. So I had actually never met him, but I had heard a lot about this kid. First off, I heard about him as a lacrosse player. He was the guy who was known. He was one of the best players on the team, one of the best players in the whole league from Colorado. And he was known for doing things on the field that had never been seen before. Like, he would pull out a move that people were like, what was that? How did you do that? Scoring like in crazy ways, super athletic. I'd watched a lot of his highlights. And secondly, was like who this kid was. I'd heard a lot about this guy, Derek, who was just kind of this legend who could be seen on any different day talking to a new person, walking down the street with someone new, adventuring, going outdoors, doing awesome shit I like to do, like going cliff jumping. And I really identified with him because everyone said he had a passion for the Grateful Dead, which has been my favorite band for a long time. And honestly, not that many people in my generation love the Grateful Dead that much. So I had built up this pretty big image of who this kid was. And then he was gone before I ever met him. And something really shifted in me when I found that news out. I remember walking back from the meeting with my friend Witt, and we're walking on the sidewalk, and I just started crying. Just so sad. And something inside of me had cracked. Something had changed. I didn't know what it was, but you know, in that crying, something was being released. And so, granted, this big event happens, but still remember that I'm still in the same place that I was. Every day, you know, I'm very stressed at this point. I have a lot of stress. Still self-medicating. And I, you know, it actually gotten so bad to the point where things were definitely getting worse. I remember having breakdowns once or twice in my room, where I would get back to my room when I was by myself, and all of a sudden, like, crying would just erupt. So meanwhile, my life feels like it's caving in on itself a little bit, but I'm managing, you know, high functioning achiever with a lot of internal struggle. And this moment with Derek's death shifted that. It shifted everything. It shifted the whole nature of how our team interacted with one another. There was a lot of mourning that went on. And part of that was people on the team sharing their reflections of who Derek was, both in team meetings and at his funeral. And one thing that kept popping up was people would talk about Derek's obsession with this concept of living in the now. Living in the now, living in the present moment, was something that Derek was all about. And I don't know why, but when people would talk about this concept of the now, I was just so curious about it. I didn't know why I was curious, but I was very curious about it. And so through people talking about it and through the funeral, I knew that I needed to learn more about the life of Derek Flahive, because I knew that he had figured out something that was important to life. And I had no idea what it was, but I knew it was important. Just in the way people described his being. I wanted to be like that. I never met this guy, but I wanted to be like him. And so I picked up The Power of Now. Actually, one of my friends had the book. I believe it was Chris Brand. And let me borrow it. It's either Chris, Pete, or Dory, one of those. Chris or Pete. Can't remember. So I got this book, and immediately, within like the first chapter, my mind is fucking blown. Cause I realized this, the source of all my insecurities and anxieties and depressions. And it was this fact that I had been living so much in the past and living in the future, and I had spent so little time in the present moment. And to anyone out there who's interested in learning more about the present moment, buy this book, The Power of Now, because what it's about is the power of right now. So take a moment and just listen for a second. Feel your body. Notice what you're looking at. That's the present moment. And that's what this book taught me, was that there was always this present moment and that it was actually available to all of us at any time, that you just had to train your mind to get there. And so I was just amazed, because before this book had even changed my physiology and the way that I was experiencing life, I knew that I had found the solution to my problems. Just on a conceptual level, I understood that the present moment was the key to solving my anxiety. I realized that if I could actually live in the present moment, then everything would be okay, because when you're living in the present, you're not focused on the past or the future. So there is no worries. You're totally immersed in what you're doing. So that was awesome. And at the same time, I started going to therapy, and I'll never forget, as I walked, I booked my therapist appointment and I walked in the utmost secrecy. I had my sweatshirt, my probably like non-identified sweatshirt on with the hood up. I went like a back way to the counseling center, and you know, cause I was so embarrassed. I needed a fucking therapist or a counselor. Who am I? Like a kid with problems? So I was obviously throwing a lot of hate on myself. And so I get to therapy, and this amazing, beautiful woman, Jing Yi, is my counselor. And little did I know, she walked me through a guided body scan meditation as the first thing we did. I was sitting there in this big red chair, and so it's aligning very closely with this power of now, because I now have a therapist who's from the East. You know, she's from somewhere in the East. I think China is where her heritage was from. And so she had this Eastern background. And so our counseling sessions would always start with this meditation. And that was, and so along with that, it gave me the opportunity to start talking about the way that I was feeling. And boy, was that like feeling, that was awesome. Just to talk with someone, just to, cause I really needed to talk to someone. I couldn't talk to my parents about this stuff, but to talk to her was amazing. And so I'm reading The Power of Now. I'm going to therapy. Jing Yi is also teaching meditations twice a week at Colby. So I started going to meditation and I just start feeling very different. And I start feeling good. And I realized, like, I made a decision, like, I am not going to need this Prozac anymore. So I am going to cut the dose in half and I will be off this in less than 2 months. And I just did it. Just decided. And I was feeling good. And I started reprioritizing my life. So what all the partying and lack of focus had led to my freshman year was me underperforming on the lacrosse field, earning the starting spot off reputation for the first game, and losing the starting spot within literally my first run on the field. I started the first game, had one run, and then was literally moved to third string. Like, that's how bad it was. So I started reprioritizing lacrosse, and things started just really turning around with all this. I started going to the gym before school, and these meditations twice a week, and I'm just starting to feel really good. I'm feeling so great and so confident that I started working my way back onto the lacrosse field. I was getting back into games. They had us on the what was called the 2.5 midfield, and we were kind of battling out with the second string. So I was getting back on the field a little bit, and I was just feeling confident, you know, with myself, with girls. I felt like life was going to keep improving, and I was feeling so confident that it was a sunny day one day in the spring, and I just felt like going on Facebook chat to talk to some girls. And I'd never really been super confident, but today I was feeling super confident. And so I sent a Facebook message to a girl who I had thought was the most beautiful girl from my hometown and never thought I had a chance, went to a different school, but I was just feeling open that day. I was like, well, who knows what's going to happen? So I sent a Facebook message and just kind of started talking. And turns out that Facebook message led to me and this girl dating. And I have fell in love with this girl. So freshman year is coming to a close. I'm feeling just great. I've got lacrosse has turned around. I've now have this huge goal of sophomore year. I'm going to be a starter. Like, I'm going to be one of the leading goal scorers. I'm going to be the very best that I can be. I'm, you know, falling in love with this girl, and you know, I'm just pursuing a calling in lacrosse, and you know, it became a mission. And so I spent the next year pursuing that dream. I dedicated like everything to lacrosse, and you know, it worked out. I earned the starting spot the next year, and I scored lots of goals. Even though I still cracked under the pressure sometimes, my anxiety still got the best of me on the field. For all you athletes out there, this stuff is super relevant because you need to have a strong mind in order to perform, just like in business. And so even though I was meditating, my mind still wasn't super strong. So, you know, in overtime, and there were a couple occasions where I definitely cracked under the pressure, which I think if I had the mindset I do now, I don't know. I don't think I would have. So lacrosse went great. I was in love that whole year. I was head over heels and I was in the honeymoon phase, but honestly, I still wasn't really comfortable with myself. And the honeymoon phase is what kept the relationship alive because I couldn't talk about my feelings. And so I think we were just like making it through on the high of falling in love. At the same time, as much as I loved Colby and all my teammates and I loved playing lacrosse, it was a tiny school with 1,700 kids in northern Maine where winters had sunsets at 4 p.m. And meanwhile, back home in Charlottesville is the University of Virginia where, you know, there's parties and everything's going on. And all I can think about is like this epic college experience that I'm missing out on. So I just put in one transfer application and I got accepted to the University of Virginia. And so when I accepted that offer, I was still kind of on a life high of lacrosse and all that good stuff. But, you know, I kind of had this expectation that, you know, well, I'm going to go to UVA, University of Virginia, and it's just going to get even better. Like, that's the only thing. How could you go to a school like that and go home in the warm weather? Like, it could only get better. So a younger me was not wise with managing expectations, because little did I know that this life high that I was on, which was including the actual acceptance into Virginia, that was probably the peak of it all. You know, little did I know that this life high was soon gonna change, and that I was actually gonna go into a dark time where I was gonna have to kind of figure things out. And so that's where I'll start the next episode. To wrap it all up here, regardless of where you are on your journey, I want you to remember one thing, and that is that you have the power to change the way that you feel. You have the power to change the way that you feel. So on that note, my friends, have a great day, and I'll see you soon.